I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps. I'm your host, Larry Lease. In today's episode of what would be Cold Case Friday, we're actually going to continue slash start our series of murders that took place during the Halloween season. And with that, our story for today is the Napa Valley Halloween Murders. This episode begins in 2004 in Napa, California. Napa is a beautiful little town north of San Francisco in the heart of California's wine country. It serves as the seat of Napa County and is primarily known for its wine and wineries. Napa is considered a very safe place to live, and according to ABC News, prior to Halloween 2004, there hadn't been a murder there for 2 years. But we know the context of this podcast and how we are always breaking those expectations. The population of Napa is about 75,000 people, and the town is described as upscale and charming. Our case takes place in a particular neighborhood within Napa, which, according to neighbors, is described as, quote, very quiet, sort of leave it to beaver kind of neighborhood, where people wave to each other and walk their dogs. It was in this friendly neighborhood that three young women decided to room together in one of the four-bedroom, two-bath homes. Those three women were 26-year-old Leslie Ann Mazzara, 26-year-old Adrian Insogna, and their friend Lauren. According to some sources, Leslie, Adrian, and Lauren met in college and became friends and later decided to rent a house together. Most other sources claim that Adrian and Lauren were already good friends from college and had been renting the house together in early 2004. Leslie moved to Napa from South Carolina after college, became friends with them, and moved in by June of 2004. According to her family, Leslie made friends quickly and easily. She was outgoing and beautiful, and so it wasn't surprising that shortly after meeting Adrian and Lauren, she was invited to move into the home in Napa as their third roommate. And although all the girls were young and in their 20s, neighbors described them as very nice people and good neighbors. As renters, they were quiet and respectful of the long-term families nearby, which was very appreciated. Before we go any further, I want to take a moment to introduce you to each of the girls so that you have a good understanding of who they were as we continue. Leslie was born on August 1st, 1978 in Orlando, Florida. She was described as bubbly and had been a beauty queen. She moved from Orlando to South Carolina and competed in the 2003 Miss South Carolina pageant. She had been 2002 Miss Williamston and was also a member of the Greenville Ballet Company. She graduated in 2003 from the University of Georgia with a bachelor's degree in philosophy. She was also a member of the karate club and lacrosse team. Leslie had two brothers and was close with her grandmother and her mother, Kathy Harrington. According to sources, Kathy was the major reason Leslie even moved to Napa after graduation. The story varies. Kathy, a minister, either thought the move would be good for her daughter, or she herself lived in Napa and wanted Leslie to be closer. Either way, Leslie moved and by 2004 was living with her friends and working for a local winery as a tour guide and sales coordinator. Adrian was born on December 30th, 1977. Adrian was from a nearby town and high school had been in a terrible car accident that led to years of recovery. Still, she graduated in 1996, went on to college, and earned an engineering degree. She worked as a civil engineer for the Napa Sanitation District. She attended Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, a college you may have recognized from the Kristen Smart case. Adrian had been a member of the Society of Civil Engineers and a longtime Girl Scout who went on to lead troops. She also played volleyball and softball and was very active in charities. She was close with her mother, father, stepmother, and brother. Lauren was the third housemate. She had a degree in political science and had been an all-star athlete. Out of respect for what I've learned while researching, I won't go further into Lauren's life or identity. She's a survivor and deserves that privacy. These were the three girls, by all accounts, successful, driven, and hardworking women with their whole lives ahead of them. But we know where this story is going, and because it's a Halloween episode, we also know that by the time October 2004 rolled around in Napa, California, something bad was about to happen, something that should never happen to anyone. Back in South Carolina, Leslie had gone through a bad breakup with a man named William Lee Youngblood Jr. The breakup was not going well. He began making Leslie uncomfortable, calling her constantly. It was in part to escape him that Leslie took her mother's advice and moved to Napa. But this wasn't the only relationship drama happening in the friend group. Adrian was close with a co-worker named Lily. Lily had been engaged to a man named Eric Koppel, but by late 2004, they called off their engagement. Like Leslie's ex, Eric did not take it well. To support Lily, Adrian decided to plan a trip to Australia to help her heal and get away. Leslie's ex, William, and his family were still calling her regularly, even though she had moved across the country. It was a lot. The girls were trying to build a normal life, dating, working, and living together. Leslie had started seeing a few men and even brought one home one night in October. Adrian and Lauren could hear her with him, and they giggled about it later, deciding not to say anything. Then Halloween arrived, October 31st, 2004. That night was supposed to be Lily and Eric's wedding day, but it had been called off. The air among the group was tense. Because of that, the roommates decided to stay in, hand out candy instead of going out. They decorated the house with jack-o'-lanterns and even made special goodie bags for the kids. It was a happy night. Neighbors remembered the warm atmosphere and said the girls had gone all out for the neighborhood kids. But as the night wore on and the trick-or-treaters faded, the three women called it a night and went to bed. Sometime between 1:30 and 2 a.m., Lauren, who was sleeping downstairs, was woken by the motion sensor light near the garage. She also heard her dog, Chloe, growling. It was unsettling but not terrifying. The house had cats that sometimes tripped the sensors. Then, minutes later, she heard the door open and someone coming up the stairs. She assumed it was Leslie's date coming over again. She quieted her dog and tried to go back to sleep. But then, the screaming began. Lauren was jolted awake to the sound of Adrian screaming, "Please help! Please help me!" Frozen in fear, Lauren opened her bedroom door, but couldn't make herself go upstairs. Before she could react further, she heard someone running down the stairs, smashing and breaking things in their path. She dashed through the kitchen, out into the backyard, but she had made a mistake. She was trapped, surrounded by a 6-foot fence with no way out. She hid in the shadows, listening as the intruder moved around in the kitchen, struggling with the blinds or windows. Then the house went silent. Lauren could still hear Adrian's faint cries for help. Not knowing if the intruder was still there, she got up and crept back inside. She tried the house's phone, but the line was dead. She tiptoed upstairs, opened Adrian's door. The entire floor was covered in blood. Leslie lay face down in a pile of clothes with stab wounds all over her body and arms. A few feet away, Adrian was crouched behind her bed, alive but no longer able to speak, bleeding out rapidly from multiple stab wounds. Lauren ran back downstairs, leaving bloody footprints throughout the house. Grabbed her cell phone to call 911. The call dropped. At this time, Napa's system routed 911 cell calls to the California Highway Patrol before being dispatched to local responders, often causing costly delays. Panicked and unsure if the killer was still inside, Lauren grabbed her dog, locked herself in her car, and drove away, calling 911 again as she left the scene. When police arrived, they found Leslie already dead. Adrian was still alive, but unresponsive. She died shortly after. Neither woman had been sexually assaulted. Nothing was stolen. The scene was chaotic, but also bizarrely personal. Police launched an intensive investigation. Over 1,300 interviews were conducted. 218 DNA samples were collected, mostly from men with connections to the victims. None matched the blood at the crime scene. There was, however, one major clue. Two Camel Turkish gold cigarette butts found inside of the house. None of the women smoked, and it was a rare brand. In September 2005, nearly a year later, police made the DNA information public, hoping someone would come forward. And someone did. It wasn't a tipster. It was Eric Koppel himself. He confessed to the murder, said he couldn't take the pressure anymore, and believed police were closing in. Eric Koppel, Lily's fiancé, the one who had helped move the girls into their new rental, the one who attended their funerals and vigils, the one who asked Adrian's mother to speak at his wedding, turned himself in. He confessed to the murders, claiming that the DNA found in the kitchen and on the cigarette butts would match his. He said he had been suicidal and told his family what he had done. They encouraged him to turn himself in rather than take his own life. When questioned by police, Eric said that on Halloween night 2004, he had taken a military-style knife from his home, driven to the house where Leslie, Adrian, and Lauren lived. He said he stood outside, smoking a cigarette, then climbed through a front window and made his way upstairs. After that, he claimed he blacked out. He said he couldn't remember anything else. He didn't know where the knife went. He had driven home, burned his bloody clothes, and tried to block out the memory. Police were skeptical. Eric began giving small details that only the killer could have known. For example, he mentioned breaking zip ties to restrain someone, but said he dropped them while climbing in through the window. Those same zip ties were found beneath the exact window during the initial crime scene sweep. Eventually, Eric's DNA came back as a match to the blood in the kitchen and the cigarette butts found at the scene. The news devastated the victims' families. Adrian's mother, in particular, was stunned. Adrian and Lily, Eric's fiancé, had been close friends. Lily had brought Eric into the girls' lives, and now the man her daughter had shared social time with, the man she'd seen at gathering, was the one who murdered her child. Even more disturbing, Adrian's mother had spoken at Eric and Lily's wedding 3 months after the murders. At the time, no one knew he was responsible. Now she realized that she had hugged and supported the man who had taken her daughter from her. In October 2004, Lauren, the surviving roommate, spoke publicly for the first time. She told ABC News that she still struggled to sleep and described the night as a horror movie. She said she believed the only reason she was spared was because she had kept her bedroom door closed that night. Lauren also confirmed that once police told her about the cigarette butts and their suspicion that the killer smoked Camel Turkish Golds, she remembered that Eric had smoked that brand. He had smoked inside the house on the day Lily and her friends helped the girls move. She passed the information on to police, who had not yet tested his DNA. On December 5th, 2006, Eric Koppel pled guilty to 2 counts of first-degree murder with special circumstances: lying in wait, use of a knife, and committing double homicide. The plea deal was made to spare him the death penalty. In exchange, he would receive life in prison without the possibility of parole. He would not be allowed to appeal his conviction or profit from his crimes in any way. No books, interviews, or media involvement. He could only speak to family or clergy. At the sentencing hearing, the courtroom was divided. On one side sat the victims' families and friends. On the other side were Eric's supporters, including Lily, her parents, and Eric's mother. Lily remained married to him at the time of the sentencing and had supported him through the legal process. She even thanked the victims' families for not pursuing the death penalty. But what shocked everyone was her final statement to Eric, saying, quote, "Eric, there's nothing you could do to make me love you any less." These words are just as true today as they were on that afternoon. The statement angered and hurt many in the courtroom, particularly the victims' families. Eric spoke briefly. He claimed lifelong struggles with depression and said the collapse of his relationship with Lily pushed him into a dark place. He said he believed that Lily had been his ray of light in an otherwise black world. He offered no clear motive, no insight, no apology that could ever account for the brutality of what he had done. After the sentencing, a suicide note from around the time of his confession was revealed. In it, Eric admitted to feeling jealous of the friendship between Lily and Adrian. He seemed to believe that Adrian had poisoned Lily against him and was the reason Lily had called off the wedding. But that still doesn't explain why Leslie was attacked first. Investigators believe Leslie may have been targeted simply because she was in a room that Eric entered. Some speculated that maybe she had rejected him or threatened to tell Lily something. Those are rumors with no confirmed evidence. The truth is, Eric never explained himself, and by accepting the plea deal, the court ensured he would never be forced to. In 2008, Lily divorced Eric and changed her name back to her maiden name. The house in Napa where the murders took place was sold shortly after the incident. The case has been featured in multiple media programs, including Snapped, 48 Hours, and in the book Nightmare in Napa by Paul LaRosa. The $100,000 reward fund, which had gone unclaimed because Eric turned himself in, was instead donated to local charities chosen by the victims' families. Both mothers, in their own ways, have tried to heal. Adrian's mother later said, quote, "I still feel the pain of losing my daughter, but with the support of friends and caring people in the community, I've been able to regain some peace. I've rejoined the human race. It's never going to be the same, but I'm living again. I'm experiencing joy. This is the new normal." Leslie's mother turned to spiritual work and activism, particularly for that abolition of the death penalty. As for Lauren, the sole survivor, she has stayed out of the public eye. And like I said, based on what I found while researching, I'm not going to share her last name or any further details. She survived something unimaginable and deserves privacy. And that is the story of Leslie Mizarra and Adrian, two incredible young women whose lives were brutally taken on Halloween night. It's a story about friendship, betrayal, grief, and survival. And even though the killer confessed and justice was technically served, the true why may never be fully known. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section below. Give us a thumbs up if you like our video. Hit that subscribe button down below. And if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. You can follow us on all major podcast platforms, Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get your podcasts from. And with that, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next week for another Halloween episode. Take care.